I'm going to call the first meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. If you could please take your seats. Quorum is present, even though we don't need one because we're not really moving any committee business. I just want to welcome everyone to the Education Policy Committee. I'm Representative Cheryl Joachim. I'm really excited to be the chair of the committee this year, and I'm excited to see some returning colleagues and some new faces at the table. My CLA, who we'll meet later, Laura Helgen, is in the process of reaching out to all of you so we can have some one-on-one time so that I can hear the policies and the issues that are really important to you for our time in this committee here. So look forward to that conversation. And I've also had the pleasure of meeting some of you or seeing some of you earlier today on education finance, so I apologize if some of this is going to be a repeat as we go around, a duplication as we go around and introduce each other. But I'm going to have members introduce themselves, tell us the district you represent, and then also the district, school district you represent, and then maybe one or two priorities you have for the Education Policy Committee. And I'll kick us off. I'm Cheryl Joachim. I represent Hopkins in St. Louis Park. And I know I feel very blessed to also have the school district of Hopkins in St. Louis Park. I know many of you represent many, many school districts, and I know how tough that can be. So I do feel very lucky at that. There are many policy issues we'll be tackling in this committee this year. My goal is to have us craft policies that give our students, teachers, administration, and staff what they need to be successful in the classroom and what our students need to make have an successful education career, and so that our students really truly reach their full potential. And then my hope as chair is that we have a respectful, open, and honest dialogue while we're doing this. So to start with, Representative Erickson, could you start us off, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to the chairmanship. I'm Sandra Erickson. I represent District 15A, which is northwest of here. It's all of Mille Lacs County and parts of Kennebec and Sherburn County. And the school districts that I represent kind of the Elk River District, but that would be because Zimmerman is just south, and I have several students who open enroll to Zimmerman. Otherwise, Princeton, where I was almost four decades of years teaching, Malacca, Foley, Onamia Isle, Mora, Piers, and as I said, I have a lot of students who open enroll to these various districts. They seem to either move from the north to the south or from the east to the west. My goals always for policy and education are that our policies honor local control, and that we work to raise the achievement of our students, improve our teachers, and empower our parents. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Bennett, we'll just go down the line. Go ahead right after each other.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to be with you and the committee. And I'm Peggy Bennett. I represent 27A, live in Albert Lea. I was a teacher for 33 years and retired about 4 years ago. I taught mostly first grade, but I also have my special ed degree and taught some special ed as well and a couple of other grades. Loved teaching. It was my favorite thing, and I love kids. I miss that, but I love what I'm doing right now, too. The school districts that I represent in my district, starting west, would be the Wells, United South Central, and we have Alden Conger, Glenville Emmons, the Albert Lea Area Schools, and then moving eastward, Blooming Prairie and Hayfield school districts. My goals for ed policy, kind of similar to Chair Erickson, would be, I guess I like to see school districts have a lot of local control, but I also want to make sure our teachers have as much autonomy in the classroom as we can give them, because I think it's important. They're professionals, and teachers are kind of losing out on that.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Barr?
Madam Chair, I'm Cal Barr. School districts are Forest Lake, St. Francis, and a little piece of Anoka-Hennepin. I think it was probably most of us have a chunk of Anoka-Hennepin, I suppose, anybody in the metro. Priorities for the district are priorities, what I'd like to see my priorities. More autonomy to the local school boards so they can be adapt faster to the changing needs of education. And then, of course, this flow downhill, so as much autonomy to the teachers as possible. And VOTEC, move that along. So interaction between business owners and the seniors or junior senior classes of high school to try and get kids out of high school with a skill that they can actually earn a living with.
Thank you, Representative Byer. Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, Robert Bierman, Apple Valley, District 57A. And I would like to see, as Cal just mentioned, the more career building happening in schools and also an emphasis on civic participation by students and also giving not only teachers but students agency to learn in very diverse ways.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Erdahl, I saw you pipe up and part of that over there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yet I had not said one thing to Representative Bierman about civics education.
Yet.
Okay, I am Representative Dean Erdahl. I taught American history for 35 years at New London Spicer. Coached cross-country running for 29 years, 3 state championships, but I'm not going to brag. The districts that I represent, my hometown of Litchfield, Atwater Cosmos Grove City, Daskal Cato, Eden Valley Watkins, Hutchinson. There is one of the members of the table here shares a relative that is also a Litchfield High School graduate, and that is former Minnesota Gopher coach Bernie Bierman. And Representative Bierman is a relative of Bernie. He graduated a little bit before I did. Yes. There are certain areas, I've maintained throughout my, I've been here 16 years now, Glenn. And here in my 17th year, I have maintained certainly an interest in education. Again, that was my career for most of my life. And I have, certain areas that I'll be stressing this year. I have a bill out trying to increase revenue for smaller school districts. I have another bill on how we fund our schools, taking a look at if we were to start over again, what would be the best way to fund schools in Minnesota, looking at our complex system that we have now. I also am looking at legislation for incentivizing teachers of color to become teachers. And, of course, something that I have been trumpeting for the last several years is my belief that we need to do something about how we teach civics in Minnesota. And so I will be, again, bringing forth a piece of legislation, most of which passed the House and Senate last session and wound up in the big bill that got vetoed at the end. So many of you have already voted for this piece of legislation that we'll be bringing to you again so that you can have another opportunity to renew your commitment to the students of Minnesota and their need to graduate and be able to list more presidents than Kardashians.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I didn't know we were doing bill introductions.
Little leeway on the first day, but first day only.
Oh, Lord. My name is Carlos Mariani, State Representative from St. Paul. This is actually in my district. The capital is in my district. I have the central part of St. Paul from Roseville down to the Dakota county line. My school district is the St. Paul School District, and then we have a number of charter schools as well in my district. Madam Chair, congratulations on being named the chair of this committee. I'm looking forward to serving with you, and I expect big things from you. And no doubt that's coming. And I also want to acknowledge and thank Representative Erickson for having chaired this committee over the last two bienniums as well. She and I go back a few years, I think we've done some pretty good work together as well over that time. I've got a number of big issues, but the ones I put out on the table very quickly, I'm particularly interested in advancing race equity in education for Minnesotans, and frankly, race equity means success for students of color, American Indian students, and it also means success for Anglo-white students as well. Success is success, and in order for us to have, a quality academic experience and outcomes with our young people, race equity needs to be at the center of that work. Very specifically, as Representative Erdahl, I'm very interested in doing all we can to advance diversifying our teaching corps, racially diversifying our teaching corps in our state. We have made strides here over the course of the last several years. In that regard, I want to be able to continue to keep moving us in that direction. And I'm also particularly interested in emerging multilinguals. We commonly refer to them as English language learners. It's a subcommittee of student population, which is actually the fastest growing student population in the state, and a student population that's present in virtually every school district around the state. It's also a population that we are particularly challenged as delivery of our educational systems to have success with. And so I've got a few ideas this year that hopefully will entertained in regards to advancing the best practices for emerging multilinguals in our state.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, and I look forward to working with you and Representative Erickson and all your historical knowledge and good work you've both done over the years. I'll be relying on that. So, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have a really squeaky chair here, so I'll try not to move. But it's a pleasure to meet so many of you, and I'm really honored to be on this committee. So I live in Shoreview. It's District 42A, and most of my community is in the Mounds View School District. I have a few residents in Roseville, but it's mostly the Mounds View School District. And I have two children who are actually in the Mounds View School District. I have a high school student and a middle school student. And one of the main issues that is important to my community is mental health services for students. I also have a personal reason that I'm very connected to that issue. So that's one thing that I'm really looking forward to working on this session.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. And then Representative Mary Kunish-Podine, our Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mary Kunish-Podine. I represent 41B, which is Columbia Heights and Hilltop, St. Anthony Village, and the southern half of New Brighton. And when I'm not here, I'm in the schools. I'm a library media specialist at the Robbinsdale Middle School, so I feel like I bring a really current understanding of the struggles and the successes that our teachers and our administration and our students are, living in this day and age. One interesting fact is that we have a new state representative that was a student of mine back when she was in fifth grade. Samantha Vang was my student, so pretty excited to have her on board as well. But my goal, along with the rest of you, for making sure that there is equity in our schools as well as addressing the mental health needs of our students, is just that we're creating a really well-rounded educational experience for our students. As a library media specialist, literacy is so important to me, and I just think that we have an opportunity here to create a program, our curriculum, a state-run ideology that is really going to help make our students the best future for the 21st century, and so I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kunish-Podine. I'll have staff introduce themselves after this, but Representative Scott, you want to go next?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Is that didn't sound like it. I'll just talk about it. I have a booming voice. Representative Peggy Scott, I represent 35B, which is Andover, Northern Coon Rapids, and one precinct in the city of Ramsey. pretty much all of my district is in Okehennepin. There's probably a little bit of St. Francis School District in there, up in the northern tier of the northern tier of my district. And my number one priority is always the student and what we can do to make sure that they have a world-class education, regardless of where they come from and what the color of their skin is, and also to empower parents to make well-informed decisions about their students' education. And that means making making whatever our work here, making it transparent, making the department transparent, and allowing parents to get as much information about any given school as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott. We'll have somebody look at that microphone, too. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to apologize for being a few minutes late. I had a constituent from my district, actually with a Hispanic family, that stopped in to visit with me, and so I took a little extra time. Yeah, I'm from 18B. I'm the brother district to Representative Erdahl, McLeod and Sibley County. I have the we're not brothers, just the brother district, okay? I have the Hutchinson School District, which recently passed a bonding issue, and one of the things they did with it was build a technology area in their school. And I think Representative Erdahl has toured it along with myself.
We did tour that, really.
Yeah, it's one of the best in the state. Other districts in my area are Gibbon, Fairfax, Winthrop, Glencoe, Silver Lake, from which I was a school board member for 16 years, Lester Prairie. Also, Winsted has a strong Catholic parochial school in it. And one of the things that one of the things I did prior to being on the school board, I did 13 years of jail ministry. Okay, I wasn't in jail, I did jail ministry. Okay, and one of the things I noticed is a lot of people in jail can't read decent, and yet they got a high school diploma. So that led me to running for the school board. So I really want to address the achievement gap. I'm a strong believer in intensive, systematic phonics, not whole language, inventive spelling, and creative writing. I support traditional spelling, grammar, and I believe competition can solve, in education, what millions and billions of dollars can't solve. We simply cannot continue to pour more money onto the same system that is leaving us with one of the worst achievement gaps in the nation. We have to build a ladder for our low-income people into the middle class in this state. Demographics demand it. Caring about those children and the opportunities they have for their future demand it. And so we need to be innovative. And that means we got to think outside the box, because rearranging the deck chairs and just throwing more money on the same system is not going to do it. And I've seen too many of those children trapped in schools that are failing them, and they need additional opportunities. I could talk for about 2 hours on that, but I'll quit there. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen.
All right, thank you.
I'm counting on a lot of creative minds around this table to start really taking a chunk out of the opportunity gap. So why don't we move along and go to Representative Hewitt.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm John Hewitt. I represent Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Coates, the northern part of Apple Valley. Robert, I'll make sure I correct myself. He's very possessive over that, the one that has the zoo in it. So my goal, I don't come from education. I come from emergency medical services and public safety. And I actually had to think how I'm going to help you on the committee, and it dawned on me that we have some public safety issues, as most of you know. And when I used to go into schools on calls 30 years ago, it was because someone passed out or bumped their head. Now I go into schools weekly for mental health issues and many other issues. And so I'm hoping to bring that knowledge to the committee and help with maybe some sort of way forward on that. I'm also a sports official, so I'm real, real big on basketball and football officiating, and hopefully I'll bring that to the committee and talk about the different schools. I've been in most of your districts, especially yours, sir. I do a lot of reffing here in St. Paul, so. But I'm looking forward to serving with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Hur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my name is Kali Hur, and I represent District 64A. 64A is Aaron Murphy's old district. It's in St. Paul. It runs along Summit Avenue and Grand Avenue, taking sort of chunks out all along the way, Crocus Hill, Summit Hill, Mac Groveland, Marion Park, St. Anthony Park. So there's a lot of little pieces in there. I represent St. Paul Public Schools. Best school district ever. And I'm interested in policies that really are centered around intersectionality, that I feel like education cannot be viewed just from one lens, that we must see a child's education as the center point of where housing, health, transportation, economics, food, and the environment all come together, and that if our children and their families have any insecurity in any one of these areas, that their ability to learn is greatly diminished. And so that's really important to me, and I don't know what this looks like specifically in policy. Maybe my heart is expecting too much out of ed policy here, but that I'm ready to really take that lens and apply to our work and see what we can do with it.
Thank you, Representative Hur. Representative Sundell.
Madam Chair, thanks very much for the invitation to be here. I'm honored to be a part of this this body. My name is Steve Sandell. I represent Woodbury 53B. It's a growing suburban area with a growing diverse population, and I share a lot of the interests with people around the table. I'm a serious advocate of civic education, equity in both the resources and the outcomes in education, and I'm dedicated to the idea of adding diversity to the teaching profession as well. I grew up in Minneapolis Public Schools. I've taught for nearly 25 years in the St. Paul public schools and independent schools, and found out this morning that I may be the oldest living Minnesotan that is teaching with a life certificate, and I'm proud of that that honor. But thanks very much. Appreciate for being here.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Representative Hassan.
Sorry, I don't have a name tag. Not supposed to be here, but I'm supposed to be here. I was supposed to be in Commerce, and it got switched last minute. So I am Hoden Hassan. I represent South Minneapolis. Most of you know Karen Clark, so I'm the new Karen Clark. I represent the Minneapolis Public Schools and I think a good number of charter schools. I am outside of the session here. I am a mental health clinician, so mental health in schools is important to me. And I look forward to just working with you guys and figuring out this education inequity that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. And Representative Wazlowick. I hope I said that right.
You did. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amy Wazlowick. I am representative from District 38B, which includes Wiper Lake, Wiper Township, Delwood, North Oaks, and part of Hugo. In that district, I have several school districts, Montemite, Stillwater, some kids going to Moundsview and Forest Lake, and also Wiper Lake, Go Bears. And I am really interested in mental health as well, also reading and literacy programs, and full-service community schools.
Thank you, Representative Wazlowick. I'll say it a bunch of times. Representative Christensen?
Hello, everyone. Lots of teachers. So we've got a teacher's lounge here, so let's take it easy on each other. I'm from Stillwater, 39B, from the Stillwater area. I'm a retired English teacher. My husband taught for 30-some years in the district also. I'm a cross-country coach. My husband is a cross-country coach, and he's won a few more than three, I think. Yeah, we'll have to talk, Dean. He mentioned you. Yeah.
Different class.
Yeah, different class, yeah. So I'm still coaching. My husband's still coaching. He had a life science degree also. So, I'm interested in addressing teacher shortages, especially in special education. We've got a growing problem in that area. So easing pathways for special education teachers to become certified is important, especially in rural Minnesota, outstate Minnesota. Yeah, not sure what the politically correct way to say that is. Mental health in schools, of course, is important. I think we're all, you know, I'm hopeful that we all will work on making that more available. Racial inequities in achievement is a stain on Minnesota, I think, and so we need to all put our heads together and decide what we can do to make that better. I am mostly the Stillwater School District, but I have a little teeny-weeny bit of North St. Paul and a small amount of Matamida also. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, Dave Baker, entering my fifth year here, my third term, classmate of yours again, Madam Chair.
Small business guy. I run a restaurant, a hotel back in Wilmer, straight west of here in Candiota County, the home of Jenny O. Turkey. Please buy turkey when you're out here. It's kind of something we're pretty proud of. First time on education committees, which is great for me. I love this, and I'm glad to be here. A lot of things that have already been said I'm supportive of. We have to get more teachers on the bench. We've got to get more people applying for this job. I think our earliest, newest teachers are not paid enough. I think the elders and the ones who've been around a lot longer are paid fine. But we've got to get more young people in this industry to make sure that they stick, because they're not sticking. And we've got to figure that out. I will also tell you that I took advantage of the principals, National Principal Week, that was back, I think, in October. And I took advantage of shadowing two principals, two separate days, half a day in my district. And I cannot believe, and I spend a lot of time in teachers' lounges and with Education Minnesota. I will go in there and just share cookies with them or whatever, because I just want to talk to teachers. And I've done that since day one, since I've been down here. But my shadowing a principal is nothing like I thought it was going to be. We have a lot of work to do in education. And these principals have so many hats that they wear, and they can't do it all. We've got lots to do, and I'm ready to dig in and support them in any way that we can. It's not just about throwing money at them. It is about having good policy that will help them. They need the resources, but we have to also make sure they have the right tools to work with, too. So, Madam Chair, happy to be here.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And I'll have our staff introduce themselves. Do you want to start?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Laura Helgen. I'm the committee legislative assistant for this committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Adrian Benjamin. I'll be your committee administrator.
Christina Perrod, Nonpartisan House Research.
Tim Scrum from Nonpartisan House Research.
And I should have mentioned before, these are the folks that you're going to go to talk about amendments, bills, folks that can answer just about any question under the sun, except especially Mr. Strom. Because how many years have you been here?
Well, this is my 36th session with the legislature.
We're talking some real historical knowledge there. So, Mars?
Mars Beltrandi, Redquist, DFL Research.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jody Withers, House Republican Research.
And then maybe our pages could quick stand up and introduce themselves. I'm sorry, or come up to the microphone so they can hear it on tape.
Laura Schroeder from Prairie Lake. Chloe Burgess from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the introductions. In your packets, you'll find your agenda, of course, and other information for the committees of those testifying. But you also have a copy of the committee rules in there. It goes over the 24-hour rule for amendments, a few other things. So you can look at those, and if you have any questions, please just let me know. My goal with these first few meetings is to really lay the table for really good policy discussions that I know we're going to be having. This week, we're going to focus on all the rules our schools live by and the funding streams that they live by. And then next week, what I'm hoping to do is give us a better picture of what the kids in our schools look like. As Representative Baker said, going there during the day and shadowing a principal gave you a different experience. I've spent the last few years as a support staff and special ed mainly. When you're there day to day, it's an entirely different ball game. So next week we're going to have folks in to talk about some of the assets our kids bring to the schools, some of the challenges that they have, and some of the barriers they face to their learning. And then then we're going to be looking at maybe the opportunity gap and having some places around the state come in that have really done a good job narrowing that and look at ways maybe that we can either replicate that or figure out what they're doing right and how we can adjust it to other things. So what we're going to start with right now, though, is a quick, well, not very quick, but an overview of our Every Student Succeeds Act, so ESSA. I'm going to try not to always use the acronyms, so but there are some. And then World's Best Workforce. So the Minnesota Department of Education will come down. And I believe we have... We have Stephanie Graff from the Minnesota Department of Education. She's the Director of Equity and Opportunity. Greg Smith from the Department of Education. He's the Direct School Support. And I believe Caitlin Snyder may be joining us or not. So. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk about some of our work today. I'm Greg Keith. I'm the Director of School Support at the Minnesota Department of Education. Keith is my last name.
Thanks, Greg.
Not Greg.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having us here. Stephanie Graf from the Department of Education.
And as was previewed, we're going to talk today about the Every Student Succeeds Act and some of the work that we've been doing around that, some of the requirements for districts and schools under the Every Student Succeeds Act. Stephanie will talk about World's Best Workforce, which, of course, is a Minnesota statute, and some of the work and requirements for districts around that. And then we'll give an update in terms of our North Star system, which includes public data reporting, school recognition programs, and then identification of schools and support of schools for improvement. So I'm going to move kind of quickly here. As most of you probably know, the Every Student Succeeds Act is the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. It's a federal law. It is essentially a civil rights law. It was passed in December of 2015. And in response to that federal law, all of the states had to collaborate with stakeholders to submit a consolidated state plan articulating how we would support districts and how the state would be in compliance with the ESSA. As many of you know, we spent the first several months after the reauthorization planning, unpacking the law, working very hard with stakeholders to inform them what was in the law and to begin to engage stakeholders. You can see from this timeline that we took almost a year to engage with stakeholders around developing our consolidated state plan. I will just observe that Minnesota has been commended on the level of stakeholder engagement that we facilitated to build our state plan. And it's hard to believe that it was been so long, Stephanie. We completed our state plan in late summer 2017. There was a 30-day public comment period. We also utilized that period to go across the state and share what was in the plan and gather sort of final feedback. We submitted our state plan in September of 2017. We were one of the first in that submission window. We were one of the first states to be approved in December. We first got our feedback in December of 2017, and we got final approval in December 2018. And then we've been moving to implementation. I mentioned us being commended. Through this process, we facilitated over 300 statewide meetings. Those included not only informational sessions for stakeholders and for communities, but also engagement of our tribal leaders and our tribal nations. We did a lot of regional meetings to gather feedback from stakeholders. These also included our work groups meetings, which were quite intense. We basically had four areas where we had stakeholder groups going to develop the state plan, educator effectiveness, school improvement, accountability, and we include under accountability not just identification of schools for support, but also recognition and public reporting. So a little distinction there. And then English learners or dual language learners. ESSA refers to them as English learners, refers to students as English learners, so we'll probably refer to that throughout our presentation. We did some other stakeholder engagement with focus groups, with online surveys. We had a website built where people could review materials and submit comments electronically as well. So, Stephanie, do you want to add anything to the process? Very quickly, just wanted to provide kind of the context as you listen to some of the work that we've been doing and the updates that we're providing. Many of you have heard this, but some of the priorities that emerged from stakeholders that really guided our development of the state plan and our implementation of our state plan are equity. That was the number one priority from stakeholders, and that was a big piece of all of our planning and is a big piece of our our implementation of ESSA. And this focus on every single student, including students before kindergarten, so early learning as part of the conversation. We wanted in Minnesota, and stakeholders wanted, instead of a federal law, ESSA driving our work, that we really let World's Best Workforce, the Minnesota law, really provide the umbrella, and then develop our ESSA plan in support of World's Best Workforce. And that also created a lot of opportunities for alignment and connection to streamline and help school districts. It was important to stakeholders and is important to us that under ESSA, it not just be about reading and math and reading and math tests and reading and math scores, but rather creating a well-rounded student and ensuring that all students have access and benefit from a well-rounded education. And then finally, two things. In kind of the accountability realm, that accountability was built and implemented in a spirit of supporting and partnering with schools and districts versus one of compliance and one of shaming districts and schools when they're identified for support. So we've really tried to implement ESSA in partnership with schools and districts and pursue this as an opportunity to support schools and districts. And then finally, a big piece for parents and for districts, but especially for parents and communities, was that our reporting is transparent and that we are constantly striving towards making data available to parents and communities so they can make informed decisions and so they can understand the data that they're looking at versus it being something that you have to be a statistician to understand. So a lot of our work in public reporting has been around plain languaging and around giving parents and communities the data that they need to pursue equity conversations in the communities and with schools. Stephanie? Oh, excuse me. Just wanted to share this. Has been a big centerpiece of our implementation of ESSA. I mentioned that equity was so important in our development of our state plan, and one of the follow-ups that we did was to begin to try to articulate or operationalize what our commitment to equity as a department is. We talk a lot about equity at the department, and we talk about how important it is, and we push districts towards equity, and we felt like a good next step was to take some of the work and really begin to operationalize it in terms of what does that commitment to equity look like? What are some of the areas where we're committed to take action to ensure equity and pursue equity? So I did want to just share with you our 10 equity commitments. I'm not going to run through all 10. I'd be happy to come back sometime. We'll engage in other conversations about that. But this is a piece of the work that we're really excited about and that we've been working with districts quite a bit on and creating a lot of energy and momentum within the agency itself around sort of the next level of equity work from acknowledging it as a priority to actually beginning to say, well, what do we do if it's a priority? So now, Stephanie.
Madam Chair, members, again, Stephanie Graff, thanks for having us. I'm going to kind of pivot now to another request was to talk through the World's Best Workforce legislation. And so I'll kind of talk through the World's Best Workforce legislation. As Greg had mentioned, throughout our ESSA stakeholder engagement process, one of the themes or kind of priorities that we heard of several was around the importance of coherence and connection between federal accountability and support and state accountability and support. And so we've really been intentional of focusing on bridging that gap between the World's Best Workforce, which really is a strategic planning and accountability framework for the state of Minnesota in state law, and the Every Student Succeeds Act. So I'll try and kind of point out where we found those connections and that alignment. Let me also just acknowledge that Mr. Keith and I are going through a lot of information today, and would be happy, and Greg mentioned it as well, to follow up with conversations or information or clarifications in addition to some of the question time today as well. So I just want to acknowledge that what I'm about to go through is a lot of information, and particularly if you're new and haven't been immersed in this, happy to have follow-ups, Madam Chair. So the World's Best Workforce legislation, it's 120B.11. As I mentioned, it's a strategic planning and kind of accountability framework. It was passed in state law in 2013 with some enhancements or revisions in 2016. There are sort of four sort of main parts of the legislation, and I'll kind of talk through each of these. So first, it's a long-term strategic plan, an annual report and public meeting, a summary that I can kind of talk through that is submitted to MDE, and then a part of the accountability and support for a group of identified districts and what that work looks like. So first, all school boards, and I will say the World's Best Workforce legislation doesn't say local education agencies, it says school boards, will adopt a comprehensive long-term strategic plan to support teaching and learning in these five focus areas. And it's a continuum from early learning and having all kids ready for school all the way up through having all students prepared for the workforce and post-secondary. So you can see the five goal areas there. School readiness goals, having all third grade students achieve grade level literacy, closing the academic achievement gap, having all students attain career and college readiness, and all students graduating from high school. It's also, I think, important that I'm not going to go through all of the nuances of the legislation, but I think it's important to call out, and one connection to ESSA is really around what we're referring to as teacher equity. And it's required in World's Best Workforce that this strategic plan really focuses on ensuring all students, particularly our students of color and our Native American students and our students from low-income families, have equitable access to experienced, in-field licensed and effective teachers, and diverse teachers as well. And so World's Best Workforce Plans, and this is a newer part of the legislation. This is the part that passed in 2016 after ESSA. And so districts are really maturing in this area and really thinking strategically about what kind of data do we look at and what do our strategies look like to ensure all students, again, have access to experienced, effective, in-field, and diverse teachers. It's another pretty significant part of the strategic plan for districts. A couple pieces that I think kind of fall under the category of stakeholder engagement and continuous improvement in the legislation. First, a requirement around establishing and convening a district advisory committee of representative stakeholders, really to make recommendations and to provide strategic advice to the school board. This district advisory committee is intended to be primarily, the legislation says, two-thirds parents and community members to the extent practicable, and really representative of the student population and the backgrounds and experiences of the students that the district serves. Each year on district and charter school websites, there's something called the World's Best Workforce Annual Report, which is really a reflection on the prior year, progress towards the goals in the five areas, progress on implementing strategies to move the needle in the World's Best Workforce areas, and really thinking about, again, in the spirit of continuous improvement, how did the last year go, publicly reporting that and having that conversation through an annual public meeting with stakeholders and with the advisory committee, and tweaking and refining the plan moving forward. And then one piece, and MDE does not collect World's Best Workforce plans. We don't have annual reports submitted to us. But what the legislation calls for is that districts and charter schools will submit a summary of the annual report to MDE on an annual basis. And we collected those summaries. We're still trying to nudge some districts to get them all in, but those summaries were due this year between October 15th and December 15th. And we're actually just embarking on a review process of all nearly 500 charter and district World's Best Workforce summaries, and will, as we have the past few years, provide feedback to districts likely in March is what we're anticipating. There is, just to put on your radar, a World's Best Workforce legislative report that is due to all of you the end of this month, which actually does indicate which districts and charters have not yet submitted their summary. But we really look forward to this process and getting kind of all hands on deck. You can imagine the number of people at MDE. It's anywhere between 50 and 70 people pulled away kind of from their day jobs to go through these reviews and really in the spirit of providing coaching and comments and input and feedback to spark conversation among district leadership teams when the feedback gets sent back in March. And then kind of the accountability and the support piece. And I'm actually going to talk a little bit more in depth about this when we get there, get to that part of the presentation. But the legislation does call for the commissioner to identify in any consecutive three-year period those districts not making progress towards, as the legislation says, teaching and learning, and really in collaboration with the district, thinking about improvement strategies and using up to 2% of general education revenue to implement those strategies. And I'll talk a little bit more in depth about our work in that area as well. So the North Star system was, of course, established and kind of a central part of our Every Student Succeeds Act state plan development alongside stakeholders over the course, as Mr. Keith had mentioned, a couple of years. And we really think about this as three different parts to the North Star system. First, data reporting. Second, school recognition. And I've heard a couple comments here, and I heard this morning as well, around really wanting to shine a light on where practices are working and kind of elevate those stories. So excited to hear some of that too. And then lastly, accountability and support is sort of the three parts. So I'll just kind of touch on recognition to start. Or sorry, data reporting to start. So, of course, transparent data reporting came out as a priority, as Greg had mentioned, for our stakeholders, and in particular thinking about the Every Student Succeeds Act as a civil rights law and the importance of empowering parents and community members and educators with meaningful data to be able to make decisions on behalf of kids. And so that has been a focus area of ours and will continue to be a focus area as we think about enhancing our Minnesota report card and the components and the visualizations of the data to make it as user-friendly as possible. So in addition to assessment results and graduation rates, ESSA also calls for new data reporting requirements in some key areas. I had talked about the equitable access to educators, and so that is one new data reporting area that we did release in December on our report card for the very first time. It's been a part of some other World's Best Workforce profiles for a couple years, but this is the first time that it's a part of our primary sort of data reporting vehicle, the Minnesota report card. Discipline disparities are coming. Another requirement under ESSA, really thinking about which student groups and are disciplined potentially at higher rates and sparking conversation around the types of strategies to of course reverse those patterns that we do see. Preschool enrollment, so looking at public preschool enrollment and Head Start enrollment for the first time now as we think about the World's Best Workforce goal around all students ready for school, the first time that this data is really front and center kind of on the Minnesota report card for folks. Rigorous course taking, such as advanced placement and IB, college going information and credit accumulation in college information are new data points on the report card as well. And fiscal transparency is a really big one that's gotten a lot of buzz something we're really excited about. Just actually wrapped up some preliminary conversations with stakeholders over the course of the last few months around priorities, around fiscal transparency, we'll continue to kind of work through that through some outreach and focus groups and things moving forward to actually report fiscal information on our Minnesota report card for the first time, likely in about a year to 18 months or so. And lastly, data around foster care students and students experiencing homelessness now on the report card in a couple key areas as well. We did hear during our outreach efforts how much language matters and terminology matters and using language that resonates with people and that invites people in, right, to explore the data. And one thing that we really heard was that parent-friendly report cards, and as we look across the country as well, using a question-based format is something that people really liked. And so we did shift in December our Minnesota report card to a question-based format. So instead of saying, for example, MCAs and MTAS, which are our state assessments, we say, how are students doing in mastering standards, or are students mastering standards, right? And so you can kind of see the types of questions that you'll find on the report card. And then again, if you click on those, you can pull open the data and you can kind of dive as deep as you'd like. Something that we also heard was really kind of wanting in the frame of we heard a lot about a dashboard and wanting a data dashboard, right? So kind of an at-a-glance look at how schools and how districts and how the state is doing on multiple indicators. So we've actually enhanced what we're calling our My School report and have redesigned it, and this was released in December, this new My School report. It's, again, that at-a-glance summary. It includes some high-level information around student perceptions from the Minnesota Student Survey, which we've heard from youth is really, really critical for looking at student experience, right, in the school. Attendance, achievement, of course, and graduation rates. And then something that we've heard from schools and districts that they're excited about is this new principal's message. And so we've given all schools at this point, potentially thinking about moving this to district level as well, but starting with all schools in the state and an opportunity for school leaders to add some narrative on the report card so that when users go to the report card, they're able to really, in the absence of somebody going into the school, talk about what it feels like to be in that school and what the school values and the types of programming, right? So maybe if the school is a STEM-focused school, they can talk about that in their narrative. And so that is right now on the My School page as well, and more of that qualitative information, kind of some of the context and the story of the school. The second part of North Star, of course, is school recognition. And I had mentioned earlier, really, you know, what we heard is, this is not required in ESSA, just to mention that. Of course, we're required to identify schools, we're required to provide support, but we heard early on the importance of Minnesota really being a leader in being able to highlight best practices. Like I said, elevate those stories and think about what can we do to share those across the state. And so we started our school recognition system and really see this as an iterative process or a system that can evolve over time with some really creative thinking. It really is an area where we can be super innovative and creative, which is really, really refreshing and kind of energizing when you think about a lot of the parameters around ESSA. So in August 2018, over 500 schools were recognized using our accountability indicators. And I'm going to talk through those in a minute, but they're primarily test-based measures in addition to graduation rates and attendance. And so we released those in August along with our school identifications. And do anticipate still yet this year expanding our recognition system to include other areas that we've heard are really important, like school readiness, well-rounded education, or career and college readiness. I'm going to talk a little bit more in depth on those, but I wanted to show you the visuals of sort of the badges or the artwork that schools across the state, over 500 of them, did receive in August. And some schools received multiple badges, some, just one, or some weren't quite there yet on the accountability indicators. But essentially, schools can get a badge for overall solid performance or for individual student groups that are performing at high levels in all of these areas. I did want to call out the 7-year graduation rate as one that we include as an accountability indicator. And here, that the actual pool of eligible schools were our dropout recovery and credit recovery schools. So they may not have a high 4-year graduation rate, but maybe they're doing a really great job of getting students to succeed within 7 years and crossing that finish line and getting a diploma. And so that 7-year rate really was sort of reserved for, well, all schools can look at it, kind of reserved specifically for our credit recovery and dropout recovery schools. You may see this in signature lines from on emails from school leaders, on websites, and in materials handed out at community meetings and things. I'll talk about a couple areas of recognition that we've probably talked the most about and are maybe a little bit further ahead, but still kind of in the exploration stage, but a couple potential upcoming options sort of for the short term. And we've really had to think about this for short term and, you know, what's doable in short term and what's doable in long term. So high school student access to, is something offered, right, the opportunity, and actual participation in well-rounded educational experiences. So thinking about which students are getting access to and participating in the arts and CTE and health and physical education and STEM opportunities and social studies and world languages, right? So looking at the demographics of the school and then the demographics of participation in these well-rounded opportunities and thinking about, do those line up or are there actual disparities in who's participating in these things and awarding recognition for those that really do have proportionate participation and access. And then career and college readiness is another one that we've talked at length about. And kind of at this point, thinking about this potentially as a continuum from ninth grade on track when it comes to credit completion to rigorous coursework in high school, CTE opportunities, and then looking at sort of some of the post-secondary indicators around college completion, and even thinking about potential data from DEED around earning a livable wage. So kind of thinking about college and career readiness from this continuum from ninth grade all the way up into the workforce and post-secondary. We're really at the point of running data, doing some preliminary analyses around viability of some of these options. Some other ideas that have popped up from stakeholders, really looking at improvement and the value of improvement, particularly for our schools that are identified. Can we look at progress over time and award some recognition for progress and for growth and improvement? I had mentioned Ready for Kindergarten. School safety, student engagement, so safe, happy, and healthy, really diving deeper into the Minnesota Student Survey, discipline, disparities, engagement measures, school climate, those types of things. Specific to alternative learning environments, dropout recovery and credit recovery schools, and what are the real meaningful indicators in those environments? And access to support staff, and I had heard that earlier as well, whether that's counselors, nurses, school psychologists, social workers, but really looking at our schools giving students appropriate access to support staff. So we talked about data reporting and school recognition, the last part of the North Star system, and the one that was really central, of course, to our ESSA state plan is our accountability and support system. And I'm going to talk mostly about accountability, and then I'm going to shift it back over to Mr. Keith to go a little bit in depth on our system.
Ms. Graff, I want to leave a little bit of time just for a few questions.
Yeah.
Just, so if you could wrap this whole part up in about eight to 10 minutes.
Perfect. Thanks, Anna. Absolutely. So the North Star system does identify districts for support under World's Best Workforce. Of course, in schools under ESSA, we use several indicators, and I'll kind of briefly talk through the indicators. One important piece is we keep the indicators separate. Some states do combine indicators and have kind of what's called commonly called a summative rating. Our indicators are separate and really encourages folks to understand the nuance on each of those indicators and then really see challenges and successes within schools as well, and maintains that laser-like focus on student groups. This visual simply shows the circle on the left are our school identifications, and the circle on our right are our district identifications, and we use the same process to identify schools as we do for districts. We have five indicators. I won't go through all of these. Happy to dive in at some point if you'd like, but academic achievement in math and reading, and these are all required in the Every Student Succeeds Act. We had some flexibility in sort of how we calculate them, but these are all very much prescribed in the federal law. Progress towards English language proficiency is a new one and really exciting that we're elevating a focus on our English learners' mastery of English in addition to their mastery of reading and math content. Progress, so looking at growth over time, a four-year and a seven-year graduation rate, and that consistent attendance, which is really a focus on chronic absenteeism and our students regularly attending school. We use three stages to identify schools and districts, and so you can see the indicators that are at the first stage. schools and districts that are low move on to stage two. And if they're low again at stage two, they move on to stage three. Districts and schools that are low at stage three then are identified for the highest level of support. So it's a stage-based process. I'm going to get to this in a minute. This is all of our identifications of schools. I'm going to do that right before I shift over to Mr. Keith. I did mention districts under the world's best workforce. 50 of them were identified at the end of August, 33 traditional districts and 17 charter schools, which was the bottom 10% using the three stages. This was the first time that we've identified our districts under the world's best workforce. And here again is a reference to the legislation around the commissioner identifying every 3 years. And so 2018 was the first year, and 2021 would be the next year. It's a three-year cycle. We have cross-functional teams at the agency that we've developed to provide support around the world's best workforce, and this is brand new. It's over 20 or so people that have been divided into five teams. Each team has about 5 to 7 or so staff members and have been assigned a group of districts that are providing coordinated support for those 50 districts and charter schools that are identified under the world's best workforce. You can see we did some natural groupings, right? Like we grouped charters together, those with high American Indian populations together, so that cross-functional teams can kind of provide some specialty support to our districts. They have worked the past few months understanding the context, building relationships, diving into data, just really having those initial conversations with districts. And really the focus is around providing support and coaching and resources as well. I mean resources broadly, not funding, but tapping into resources and tools in the areas of continuous improvement around leadership teams and really conducting robust comprehensive needs assessments, selecting strategies and implementing those strategies. And the resourcing as well, if you think about the legislation, up to 2% is of general education revenue can be used to support the strategies. So thinking through and being a thought partner alongside those districts in how to go about this work, and really kind of being a primary contact to help those districts navigate MDE as needed as well. I won't talk through the whole timeline, but as I had mentioned, we kicked off our cross-functional teams in September, have been building those relationships, working through our support. We do anticipate later this spring that all districts identified under the world's best workforce for the first time will actually submit to MDE their articulated needs, the strategies that they're putting in place to address those needs, and that general education budget to support the implementation of those strategies. And then we'll get into supporting the implementation of that plan. I'm going to shift over to Greg. I'll just there are several ways for schools to kind of be identified under ESSA, and we don't need to get into the nuances. But I wanted to call out one in particular, and that's all public high schools with a four-year graduation rate below 67% overall or for any student group. This is really the first time that we're identifying this many high schools and able to kind of deploy our support system for those schools that have that below 67% grad rate overall or for any student group. The rest of the identifications really do use that three-stage system. So I just wanted to kind of call out that specific high school piece.
I'll just point out this slide also gives you an idea of the number of schools that were identified under the North Star Accountability and Support or Identification and Support System. Most of my remarks in terms of school improvement are going to be focused primarily at the schools identified for the comprehensive support and improvement, so those 500 schools. That's really where ESSA most clearly lays out the state and district's responsibilities. It's primarily the responsibility of the district and the school when they're identified for targeted support. So just keep that in mind. I'm primarily talking about the 200 schools that are identified for comprehensive support and improvement. And I will go very quickly and just kind of stick to the headlines. And if you'd like follow-up conversations or to to bring us back, then we'll be happy to do that as well. There are some broad requirements for schools. Well, let me change that. There are some specific requirements for districts and schools that are identified for both comprehensive and targeted support and improvement. But broadly, they fall into four basic areas. They have to engage with stakeholders around their improvement work. They have to conduct a needs assessment, which involves looking at its data in some very specific areas outlined in the law. They do, and this is new, in ESSA, they do have to look at how both district and school level resources are allocated to ensure equity and to ensure equitable outcomes for students. That's a new piece, and a piece that we really shored up and went beyond what was required in law in our consolidated state plan. And then, of course, they have to design and implement an improvement plan with specific evidence-based strategies or practices that the levels of evidence are spelled out in ESSA. So, and that's also a new piece, this requirements for an evidence base behind what schools are implementing in their school improvement plans. We've developed, in partnership with the regional centers and with Minneapolis and St. Paul, we've developed a number of resources to assist schools. I'm not going to go through all of these. I'm just going to point out two of them that have been new and have been most useful with schools and districts, and then just make a quick observation about one. Compared to our No Child Left Behind waiver, ESSA designates that the primary entity that's responsible for school improvement activities is the district. Under our waiver, the primary responsibility primarily laid with the school and with the state supporting the school. So this idea of the district's role in rapid school turnaround is new to many districts. So we developed a tool for districts to self-assess and to clearly define what's the district's role in school improvement, in rapid school turnaround. We've worked with all of our CSI districts or CSI districts with CSI schools to self-assess and develop a plan around the district's role in supporting school improvement. Secondly, we've provided some very specific guidance around looking at resource equity and resource inequities. And I want to point out that when we are saying the word resources, I know most of us think money first, but we've identified nine different areas where they need to look at how they distribute resources. Money is one. Effective teachers is one, instructional time is one. I won't go through all nine, but it goes beyond money, and we think the most important one, or one of the most important ones, being effective teaching and effective human capital. So that's a big piece for us as we're working with schools. We continue to primarily leverage our regional centers of excellence across the state to support schools in meeting the requirements and engaging in the activities. I will just point out that we treat Minneapolis and St. Paul, who do have a number of our CSI and TSI schools, we treat them differently. We have they have their own sort of regional center teams that work with their schools, and then we have a specific MDE position that works specifically just with those two districts around their school improvement efforts. So if I were to redo this here, we'd probably have additional stars on here because Minneapolis and St. Paul essentially have their own regional centers. But we are one of the few states that actually provides direct support to schools through some sort of intermediate agency and actually works in the schools to meet the requirements under ESSA. This slide really just shows what have been some of the key milestones so far. And I will just point out on this slide, in the interest of giving plenty of time for questions, that currently schools are establishing their leadership teams or have already established their leadership teams. They're conducting their leadership teams, facilitating meetings. Most schools are either finishing or in the process of completing their needs assessment. We do monthly collect benchmark data from the schools to track where they are in the improvement process because we've published a timeline in terms of, if we backwards mapped, what do you need to be doing to complete your planning year? And many of them are now moving towards looking at and identifying their evidence-based practices, then developing their school improvement plan in order to implement those practices. One final thing on this slide. Year one is, according to our consolidated state plan, a planning year. This is also something that's new under ESSA versus our No Child Left Behind waiver, where every year they developed and implemented a plan. Under ESSA, we were allowed to give schools a planning year. Since we identify on a three-year basis, the first year is a planning year to develop their plan and what we call install their evidence-based practices, so that then in years two and three, they're actually implementing their plan. We really believe that reflects best practices in school improvement better than this sort of one-year race to the finish line rotation. And then the final, I'm not going to do this again, Stephanie, I have a slide left at the end. The final thing that I'd like to just point out is we put a lot of energy as well into, even though year one is a planning year, there are still improvement things that should be happening. We refer to those as quick wins. They may not show up in the actual school improvement plan, but we acknowledge and we want to work with schools towards, okay, we're not just going to take a year to develop a plan. We have immediate things for improvement that we can also do. So we work very intentionally with schools in those five areas that you see on the right there to identify quick wins that they are implementing during this school year. And one of those is looking at the equitable access to effective, in-field, experienced, and diverse teachers. Another one that we look at pretty close, or that we look at closer with schools, is supporting the actual implementation of the academic standards in classrooms, and that all students have access to the rigorous standards. So, boy, that was quick.
Yes.
If you know me, I can talk about school improvement for 15 hours. So,
thank you, Mr. Keith and Ms. Graff. I'm sure folks will be reaching out to you if they have questions. If they need your contact information, I'm our committee administrator has it. So thank you. And I think we just have maybe time for two questions. I know Representative Hurry, you had your hand up, and then we'll go to Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question around just some of the work around the equity work. And I know you said you would bring more information maybe at a later time, but I'm just curious around data disaggregation and the work around that, because I feel like in order for us to talk about equity, we actually have to have good data to do that. And so I would just maybe when you come to us next, maybe to just share some of that work as how that informs the work that you're doing. The other thing is that I would just maybe challenge us a little bit that as we're looking at this data, for us to remember, I think that the data is really great, and I appreciate you pulling this together, but it's also really important for us to acknowledge that just because a school is graduating students at a really high rate does not mean that as a school is performing well. I can only speak to my experience and what I see in St. Paul Public Schools, where the Asian American students are graduating at a much higher rate than our white students are, even to the highest graduating population. Yet we hear time and time again that our population is not ready to actually go to college, and they are insufficient when they start school, or that, you know, our children are disciplined at a much less rate. We understand the hyper visibility of our African American students and the hyper invisibility of our Asian American students, and that for us to maybe take those nuances as we talk about some of this data, and for us just not to look at the data straight and not understand that really how that translates to populations and how their academic achievement looks like, and then even, you know, to the fact that sometimes we don't even have conversations around what this means for our indigenous population and with those students. And so I would like to maybe in the future, as we're looking at data or understanding the landscape, that we maybe talk to understanding some of those nuances so that I know that we're taking those things into consideration in the work that we're all doing.
Thank you, Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, thank you. I've got a couple districts, and this is to either testifier. I've got a couple schools, districts in my area, actually, that actually are in a four-day school week versus a five-day. Are you seeing anything that is either notable, alarming, they're doing well, that doesn't matter, from a four- to a five-day school week that you're seeing in some of the reports that you're seeing?
Madam Chair, Representative, thanks for the question. I am not even going to try to guess. my head is going in a few different directions, but it's without some substantiated sort of evidence and data and conversations. And so, I can't speak to those specific districts that have gone from 5 to 4 days. I will see if Mr. Keith has any general thoughts. But
Madam Chair, Representative, as we work with schools and districts and are in schools and districts, I don't know, and like Stephanie, I haven't taken a hard look at the data. I would not say that schools or districts on a four-day week, I have not observed that they're overrepresented in schools that have been identified for support and improvement. That's without looking at the data. That's just sort of based on my observations.
Madam Chair, I think my only comment to just follow up on, I think they have as high a quality as teacher interaction and more time and better prep time for teachers. I think it's a great model. And I think I'm just kind of curious, sometime down the road, I'd like to see how they may or may not compare. I think they're going to be in some of the schools that are accelerating. So I'm just kind of curious and something for us to watch for.
Thank you, Dr. Baker. I know people have more questions and comments, but I really want to make sure that we get to Alex Luisi. We still have a whole other presentation on the docket. So
I need 30 seconds.
Representative Herdahl, go ahead.
Thank you. Just to respond directly to that question, Representative Baker and I share the Atwater Cosmos Grove City School District, which is a four-day school week. And they were having some problems before they did this and were failing in certain areas and now have been named a school of excellence. I mean, they are excelling under the four-day school week.
Thank you, Representative Herdahl. And now thank you so much for your presentation. Folks can get a hold of you if they have more questions. And then let's bring up quickly the executive director of the Professional Educator Licensing Standards Board, lovingly known as PELSB, and Mr. Alex Luisi, which I am not sure I even said that right. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. Alex Luisi, executive director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. I did bring two board members with me as well.
If they could say their name and maybe their school district for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim McClosage, and I'm a principal in the Shakopee Public Schools.
Madam Chair, I'm Brian Rappi. I'm Chair of Pelsby, and I am a special ed teacher in the Burnsville Schools.
Wonderful, and we'll make sure that our pages have you sign in so we have it for the record. Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. And Jim got the short chair. It feels strange to be this. I love him. So this is meant to just be a quick overview of our agency and really to help this committee see us as a resource for future conversations that you have, for questions that you have about teachers. The Department of Education, I believe we're about 5% the size of the Department of Education, so they have this huge oversight of the E through 12 environment, and then we have this small little realm of the teacher world, but it feels large from our realm. So we really have four different areas within teacher, the role of the teacher. We have teacher licensure oversight, oversight of teacher renewal, oversight of teacher preparation, and oversight of teacher ethics. So these are sort of the four buckets of our work. The board is a regulatory entity. We have standards that we have to address for how teachers meet those standards, how teacher preparation providers meet those standards. But we're really trying to change, and it's reflected in the board goals for this year, to change the perspective of our agency from just this regulatory entity that's holding these standards, but to be a resource for all of the teachers, for districts, to help be part of the solution in these areas that we know that we're facing with teacher shortages. We have 20 staff. We currently have 11 board members representing different stakeholder groups. And as you probably heard talk about effective teachers just from the Department of Education, our work does overlap a lot with MDE, and we work very closely with them, specifically in the area of school support division and the work on measuring effective teachers and ensuring that we have effective teachers in the classroom. We're just briefly going to go over a few of our accomplishments. The board has only been around for a year. PELSB was created in 2017 legislation, and January 1st was 2018 was when we were created. So a few of those accomplishments for our first year, and then some challenges that we have going forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So our first year, we're entering our second year, and our first year was clearly focused on implementing tiered licensure. We were seated last year on January 1st, and we immediately went to work on making and implementing rule. We were happy to meet the rule deadline of July 1st and then submit the rules to our ALJ.
We were fortunate to have them return by October 27th, and we did receive minimal feedback, which we then were able to address. We were very fortunate during the three-month span where we did not have rule in place to have great cooperation by our stakeholders to make sure that we were able to license teachers. And we also had fantastic work done by our office staff to make sure that really not a beat was missed and everybody who needed to be licensed was licensed. So we're very happy to have that behind us. And as Alex said, we're now looking forward to making to having a more active role in promoting the teaching profession and closing some of the gaps that we're facing with teachers of color.
Thank you, Mr. McClashich. I know you guys had a heavy lift last year. Thank you.
Based on 2017 session law, we had to put together a special ed subcommittee to look over cross-categorical licensure. I was part of that committee, and it was a fantastic group of people to work with. We had stakeholders from throughout the state. We sent out a survey and had over 1,500 special educators respond, and we put together a report that I think you have now on the cross-categorical licensure and recommendations on where it should go in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Rapp. I don't think we have anything in our packets, but maybe we can get that information from Mr. Lietze later.
We didn't provide it directly. It was a legislative report that we have that we would be happy to talk about. 20 staff members, we had 10 legislative reports that we had to provide in the past year. So a lot of report writing done in our office recently, and actually there are some really exciting reports and a lot of stakeholder involvement in the information. We'd be happy to talk about those as well. The other big report that's going to be coming out, hopefully within the next week or two, is the Teacher Supply and Demand Report. It used to be done by the Department of Education. It was moved over when Pelsby was created to Pelsby. It's done every other year, and it's a expansive look at the data, including surveys of districts, of all 530-some districts, and all teacher preparation providers. So we'll have that data to be able to talk about where are we at with teacher shortages, specifically in Minnesota. And then the fourth big thing that we've really looked at this year, the legislature provided over $700,000 in grants to alternative teacher preparation providers to become units, to become a provider, and then develop licensure programs. We've already approved one in the fall, and we just approved another conditionally while they meet a few more standards at our last board meeting, and we have three more. So potentially by the end of this year, we should have five alternative pathways into teacher preparation. We're very excited about that possibility. It was definitely because of the grant funds that were provided by the legislature for that to exist, and excited to continue those conversations about making sure we have those alternative pathways, but the high expectations for how they prepare teachers are still there as well. Few challenges, and then we can maybe have time for one or two questions. The legislature gave us enough money to create an online system, but Minute asked for 2 years, and that was not enough time for us to be able to develop the online system before we had to implement tiered licensure. So we have been doing paper applications since July 1st, and our staff has been amazing at processing paper applications. I feel grateful to stakeholders who have put up with us while they're doing that. We have started the online system has set up so that our staff can enter those applications into an online system, what we call the back end, but we haven't been able to open up the front end yet because that's still in development, and we want to make sure all the kinks are worked out before we do open that system. But that would be a conversation that we would love to have continuing this year about how that system is going to make sure that it's up and running and functional for educators by the end of this year. The alternative pathway statute that accompanied the grant funds, we're making rulemaking to make sure that we have the expectations for teacher preparation that are equitable across alternative pathways and traditional pathways. So that rulemaking is huge and is underway. We should have a draft within a couple weeks presented for the 60-day comment period, and we would love to talk with legislators about that as well. We have listening sessions where we have invited stakeholders to the table, and we're very excited about rethinking about teacher preparation. What should a provider be asked to do to be able to teach, be a teacher educator for teachers in the state? We have a 5-year plan to look at all of our rules that the board oversees. It says in legislation that we have to re-look at all the rules that were under the Board of Teaching. It's a heavy lift, so we hired a rulemaking specialist, and we have a 5-year plan to do that. So you should hear a lot of conversations about rule beyond just alternative programs. We've had 6 months to gather data on tiered licensure, and we have a report, one of our legislative reports called the Tiered Licensure Implementation Report. We'd love to go through that data. But we know because of the extension of special permissions for a year that it's not a full picture of what tiered licensure is actually going to look like. So we're excited to continue to collect that data and perhaps next legislation have a better picture of what does tiered licensure look like. What did it do for the landscape of teachers in Minnesota? And finally, along with our goals to be a resource, we are developing cultural competency training that we hope to get out to districts in May and June of this year. Cultural competence training is a requirement for Tier 1 licensed teachers upon their first renewal, so that's coming up. But then all teachers are required to have cultural competence training. We developed a very robust definition of what that should look like, and knowing how strapped districts are to be able to provide this professional development, we decided to pull together stakeholders that have expertise in this area, develop a training that we can then co-facilitate with stakeholders and provide around the state. So we're in the development phase of that, but excited to get that out there. And then some of the work that we're partnering with MDE on is work around mentorship as well, to do a train-the-trainer type of model on how to be an effective mentor, knowing that that's sort of a key piece of mentorship that's often missing when districts don't have the resources to train their teachers on effective mentorship. So, quick and dirty of what we are as an agency, but please, as you come up with issues around teachers, bring us to the table, ask us questions, ask us about data, let us be a resource to help start to solve some of these problems with you.
Thank you, Mr. Luzzi. And I stand corrected, there is a snapshot in time in your packet of some of the quick licensure data. And when the bigger report comes back in February, we may have to have you in as we start to tackle the issue of teacher shortage again. So I want to be respectful of everyone's time, so maybe take two quick questions, and then we'll close out the meeting. Any questions? Representative Rodell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. Is there any way contemplated for measuring how successful alternative pathways teachers are with students?
It's a great question. So in 2015, I'm looking to Representative Erickson. In 2015, what we did is, the legislature did, is put together what we're calling a report card for teacher preparation providers. Alternative pathways will fit under that as well, and we'll have to collect that data for alternative pathways. It's a lot of data points, but we'll have those data points for all types of preparation in the state, and I think it'll be a place at least to start that conversation. Included in that is a survey of the supervisors of those teachers after they've been teaching for a year, and a survey of those teachers after they've been teaching a year. So we'll have actual survey data from them about how well prepared they feel and how well their supervisors feel that they were prepared. I'm excited to start to have those conversations of what are we seeing, and it'll allow us to not only look at alternative versus traditional teacher preparation, but different types of models, residency type models, grow your own models. What is preparation doing for our teachers in lots of different pathways?
Any other quick question? Representative Sandell.
Madam Chair and gentlemen, excuse me if I haven't been paying attention, but is the Professional Educators Licensing and Standard Board a replacement for the former Minnesota Board of Teaching?
Yes-ish. So there were six staff of the Board of Teaching, and there were 12 staff or 13 staff that were in the Department of Education called Educator Licensing, and there's a great auditor's report on this about how messed up that system was. You had a group of six talking about policy around teacher education, and then a group of 13 that actually had to issue the licenses, but had no, the policy folks had no oversight of who was issuing. So they said, bleh, bad idea, let's put these two groups together. So the Professional Educator Licensing Board is kind of a new board of teaching, but a much bigger representing both the policy and the implementation of teacher licensure.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative Sandell?
Point of clarification, so it is a replacement for the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Yes. Thank you.
And thank you again. And our next meeting is Wednesday, tomorrow, January 16th. We're going to be doing we're going to be doing an overview of education funding from House Nonpartisan Research, and then having the stakeholders come down and introduce themselves in a rapid speed dating fashion. So hopefully that will be enjoyable. Committee's adjourned.